And he said, Patrick, why can't you put a book together that's all about the best business models in the world? And I said, you know, those doesn't exist actually, because a business model also always sits in a context and is very much depending on a vision of an entrepreneur.
What is a business model? And more important, how do you shift an established one, reacting to the current technological and social developments in the world? This is one of the most important topics in the field of digital transformation. My name is Jakub Slawinski, and with the godfather of business models, I discuss this topic in more detail. Patrick van der Peil is the CEO of Business Models Inc., the agency behind the very much known business model Canvas, and even more, he's a great storyteller. We speak about the six specific business model shifts and deep dive into two very current ones, from product to services and from linear to circular. As always in the Digital Makers podcast, we make it as hands-on as possible, giving examples from both startups and corporates. As a result, we get specific action recommendations. Where do managers or company owners can start to shift their business models? In between the lines, you also get to know what the city of Delft and its blue color is very much famous for. So today, I must admit, I'm even a bit nervous because I'm having a guest in front of me who is, well, with me ever since my master's in innovation management, and the tool I'm speaking about is the so-called business model Canvas.
Yeah, so I know that you're a little bit emotional about it, right?
Well, somehow. Yeah. Today with me is Patrick from Business Model Inc., better said CEO. You are a speaker, you are an author, you are a producer of this infamous book, Business Model Generation, where exactly this business model Canvas from, Patrick. But what do you do in your professional life?
Yeah, you know, I always, when I was when I was young, I always wanted to change or challenge the status quo. So, you know, like I always thought, like, can this stuff be done easier or faster? But on the other hand, I was also very curious about how companies operate and how they would make money. So when I think back, then that was always on my mind. How do some companies perform better? Can you copy that? What can we learn from that? And right now, I'm since 11 years, I founded BMI, or Business Models Inc., because I thought I wanted to have my own model agency, right? That's the dream of every man. And then I thought that was actually that started because of publishing Business Model Generation. And then I thought, yeah, this requires a complete different approach compared to traditional consulting companies. So we are an international design and innovation company. And that's how we help, on the one hand, companies with strategy, and on the other hand, with innovation.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's why we're speaking, because in this podcast, we cover practical deep dives into digital transformation in general. And with most of my guests, I speak about either implementing a specific technology for a specific use case, or optimizing, transforming processes or culture within the company. But so far, I haven't spoke with anyone about transforming business models in total. So the whole piece, or the whole strategy piece of business models, was missing. Therefore, I mean, what is a business model, simply said?
Yeah, you know, like when I came across, I was working as a consultant in innovation. And when we came up with new ideas, we thought, like, how can you make money with such a concept? And, you know, like going back more than 10 years ago, you felt like you needed to put a business plan together. When I started to write a business plan, then I thought, like, there are so many things that I don't know. So you write down stuff that you don't know. And then later on, Steve Blank, a serial entrepreneur from the US, who is also the godfather of lean startup thinking, he said, you know, there's no single business plan that survives the first customer contact. So in my journey, trying to figure out the business plan is not the right solution, then I came across Alex Osterwalder, who talked about a business model. And then I thought, hey, that's cool, because this business model, what it says in the definition, it is actually the rationale how you as a company can create, manage, and capture value. But it's very abstract, right? Then he said, okay, it exists of 9 building blocks that all are linked. And when you look at those elements, then it starts with understanding customers. Then if you understand them, what kind of value proposition you offer, then it's about the relationship we have with customers, how you communicate, and that results into a revenue stream. And then you have activities and resources and partners that help create that value, and then there's a cost to it. So these 9 building blocks actually help you to understand how you make money or how you create value, and that's what we call a business model.
And the business model canvas, which I guess every student who has just heard that term gets familiar with, having to use it quite often. Everyone who has ideated on building a startup might have used it. It's honestly, I'm still impressed you noticed that.
What is interesting is when we started to put the book together, then we realized there was no language that allows you to talk about business models and business. So then when we had this idea, Alex had this idea, the key author, together with Yves Pinier. And then we said, okay, so when it comes to the business model canvas, why and how is it used? So at the first instance, we thought this is only for innovation. So like you said, when you're a student, you would like to create your startup, you're going to use this tool to come up with new ideas. But when we started to talk to people who use the tool, actually, it was also about understanding for existing companies how they perform on their creating revenue mm-hmm. or creating value at the moment. So then we learned that there are 2 ways to look into that. Like, one is on innovation, but the other hand also on understanding how value is created. And when we look now at when you apply this in projects, then, for example, if you take a mobile operator or a mobile company, then it exists of all kind of business models inside. So one is to understand. And if you like to innovate, then you use the business model canvas to innovate. So that's interesting how you can see there are different ways to use or apply the business model canvas as a tool.
Absolutely. And speaking for larger corporations, they run their business in many domains. They might have different separate business models that, not just one. So for them, it's even of more value to understand how do those maybe even relate, what are the key resources at hand, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we learned that there was no language. So for example, we were spending time with the CEO of Toyota Financial Services, and it was as an offsite in Santa Monica Beach, right? Mm-hmm. And then we said, when we look at Toyota, what does the business model look like? So he was sitting in the back of the room, and we were doing the workshop with 50 people. And then we asked one team to present. And, there was no clarity who was the customer for Toyota Financial Services. So he said, is it the car owner, or maybe it's the corporate company Toyota? Is that our client? Or is it a dealership? So he said, I can't believe that I work for here for over 30 years and that we have no agreement on who is our customer. Mm. So this language on bringing that clarity, or this language to bring the clarity, is super, super important.
So I see. This is also a huge role that understanding the business model plays in how to design the transformation of a business model first, right? And linking to that, just in your very recent book, Business Model Shifts, you speak about how, if it's startups, corporations, even students can use a framework you adapted to basically describe and even more design how the current applied business model can be shifted to newer one, which of course then go on accordingly with technological developments, economical, societal developments, basically the future, which is important.
Yeah, I take you back 2 years ago. So when I was spending time with our publisher in the US, with Richard Naramore in Hoboken. And he said, Patrick, why can't you put a book together that's all about the best business models in the world? And I said, you know, those doesn't exist actually, because a business model also always sits in a context and is very much depending on a vision of an entrepreneur. But I said, what I can do is to study the different business models and to see if we can find patterns. And that's what we started already with business model generation. There's a specific section about patterns. But right now we felt that, yeah, business models are also living creatures and they also change. And what we learned is that that's always nice. If you put a book together, you learn so much more about yourself and about content. So I learned that every time we look at the market, we study technology. And then as a result of technology changes, behavior is changing of customers. And exactly at that crossroad, new business models pop up, right? So you are wearing a Fitbit. That's why you walk in the park more often. Therefore, you need other goods, you need more water, you need to buy new gears, etc. So it's important to know that taking all these shifts that we describe is actually caused by technology change, therefore customer behavior change, and that's why all these business models pop up. So when you think about it, all those shifts have something to do with technology, and that's why they started to emerge so big time.
Absolutely. I mean, just thinking of where do customers do research before they purchase a good,
right? Exactly.
Or where do get customers accessed by companies? I mean, it's not through a catalog anymore in most of the cases, right? It's right at the phone, scrolling through Instagram or reading news, whatever it is. So there are, I mean, and that's just the shift for one box customer access in a way. I mean, for the other ones, partnerships, whatever you need to do to create this value, to generate this value, there are many, many more shifts. And you, in your book, describe six specific, well, shift areas, I would now name it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe let's just make it hands-on and jump into, well, if you give us a quick, maybe a quick summary of those six shifts, what are they, to get a good overview? And then at the end, we jump in one or two to speak about them in more depth in a way.
Yeah, so, you know, like we looked very much into all these definitions. And one thing is that we learned it, you can actually argue, but it shifts from linear, because there's nothing in terms of internet or whatsoever, into a more non-linear way of doing business. And that's also hard to grasp. But because of technology and internet, that's much more possible. So, you know, like we identified a shift that is from product to services, right? I'm going to talk about that later, but it's also a shift from shareholder to stakeholder. I mean, people are fed up with being sponsor for the founder of Uber, and they would like to take more care of the environment. So that's more the social element. That's the stakeholder shift. Then there's also one from analog to digital. So we thought about it, whether we'd frame that separately. But I really learned that there were four different stages in digital business models. So we thought, yeah, that's also a shift to digital. Another one, very obvious, from pipeline to platform. I mean, because of technology, we can much match supply and demand. So therefore, pipeline to platform is obvious. Then, because of my membership with Singularity University, I thought, like, yeah, the exponential shift is also there, right? Mm-hmm. If you have technology in place at the right time, you can scale. Then we shift from linear to exponential. And the other one is around the environment. That's much more about the circular shift. So shifting from also maybe, you could argue, but say like maybe analog or pipeline or linear into circular.
All right. Which one is your, let's call it your personal heart favorite? What's where do you have the most stake in? Let's speak about that one in more depth.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. No, it was different when I started this book. So what I was fascinated about is exponential and platform. But you know, like more and more, for me, it's more about the circular shift. Mm-hmm. So when I had this conversation with the publisher, he said, Patrick, I love those shifts, but the circular one, we couldn't care less here in the US. I said, okay. He said, it's not that big thing. People don't understand it. But anyway, I was stubborn. So I thought, let's put this shift in.
And it's in.
Yeah, and it's in, exactly. But what I like about that is this notion of owning stuff is it's a hassle, right? So
absolutely.
I was I took my son to the car dealer because I wanted to shift it for an electric car, but he's 14 years old and he said like, Dad, what is that that you need to take care of? I said, yeah, this is about the insurances. This is about the registration because you need to have a registration when you drive on the road. Oh, okay. So a lot of hassle and paperwork, which is not connected to driving or whatsoever. And these young generation, they don't understand. So then you see that when it comes to ownership, it's a hassle. So I believe that if you would like to change around the way we do business, then we have to do that differently. But when you think about those shifts, I was wondering, are existing companies able to make those shifts, or are startups setting up those shifts? So in other words, if you think that when it comes to furniture production, then that's a linear process. So then you say, take, make, waste. Mm-hmm. We take from the forest, we make that furniture, and then we put it in the trash bin, and then we even burn it. But when you look at circularity, then you're not owning, for example, that furniture anymore. But it's also not a linear pipeline or linear process. No, it's circular. So that requires a complete different mindset. But I was, I'm very worried, honestly, because when I put this stuff online on LinkedIn, I did that for a magazine in the Netherlands. And then many people said, like, how can you be happy if you are not owning stuff anymore?
Well, I guess even values shift, right? So yeah. Maybe let's not dive or deep dive in the psychology or the philosophy behind things as status symbols or how things make us happy or not. That would be after 2 beers or so we could do that. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess, well, we own things or we use things because we want to have a job done or a problem solved. We want to have a car because we want to drive to vacation, or we have a motorbike because we enjoy the feeling on being on a motorbike. We have a bicycle because we go from A to B, we commute to work, and so on and so forth. But I mean, with cars, I guess everyone can relate to that. It's a hassle to own it.
Yeah.
Insurance, repair, gas, unplanned costs,
maintenance,
whatever there is. And I mean, at the end, you've got to sell it. Where do you sell it? You sell it to a dealer, you get a lower price. You sell it privately, you get a higher price, but you have to manage the sale and so on and so forth. And I mean, for me, I'm in my early 30s. I never owned a car because, I mean, luckily I live in Berlin. There's so many car as a service providers available that it's just a maximum 3-minute walk to get to the next car, pay by the minute. If I'm not here for 4 weeks or I'm living abroad for some months, then I just don't pay anything, no garage, nothing. Well, on the first side, for me personally, I mean, on the first side, it always seems more expensive if you pay by the minute, you know, you pay for a ride and then the ride was 15 euros. Oh my God, 15 euros for just going from A to B. That's a lot. I mean, if I would own that car, that would be cheaper. Absolutely not. If you do, I guess business
people. If you do the
total cost of ownership, the business people would say, then it's absolutely not working out. And companies, I mean, smaller, yes, startups take care of that shift. But also, I mean, because you need apparently some assets to realize that, and you need to finance those assets in a way. That's why also corporates are actively designing that shift. But to be fair, I think setting the impulse is done by startups a lot. So they are the brave ones and they are enabling and showing that there is an option. There is some white space to be taken by shifting the business model towards that, I think.
Yeah, you know what is interesting? So when we now discuss a circular model, right? So one way to look into that is you as a consumer pay a subscription. You will never be the owner. But then that means also something in the business model, and that also means something for the owner. So I was on a stage in the Netherlands with 1,000 people in the room, and there was Dirk, and he is the founder of Swap Bike, this bike as a service. Are you familiar with that?
Highly known in Berlin, I guess. Well, the blue tires in front, everyone recognizes that marketing gag or not. So if you're in Berlin or in any European capital, you see bikes with a blue front tire. That's one of those bikes.
Do you know, by the way, why it has a blue front tire?
Well, I know, but I don't know if the story is true. Indeed, if it's just a good marketing gig or not. I mean, apparently.
I mean, it would be ugly, right? So if we would be the founders and said like, "Yeah, we're gonna put on blue tires only," do you think like, really? It's pretty ugly when you look at the frame that's orange or a different color and it's blue. But what do you think the story is about?
I think they just had no more tires available, so they just placed blue ones because they were, I don't know, cheaper, faster, accessible.
No. So there are two stories. So one is these guys come from Delft, and Delft is a city that is between Amsterdam and Rotterdam, near Leiden, and they are known and famous for their Delft's blue, and that's porcelain. And it is white and blue. So the Delft city is famous for that. But they thought, we would like to make those bikes super cool and recognizable. So we do two blue tires, because everybody will recognize that these are our bikes. Mm. But at some point they thought like, yeah, it's too much hassle and too expensive to put two. So they only stick then with one. So that's the whole story.
All right. So it's the other way around. It was it was actually cheaper to stick to one black one instead of... All right.
Yeah.
Patrick, if I ever would be in... I don't know how the show is called in English. Who Wins the Million, or Become a Millionaire? And I get the question, what is the color of the city Delft? I will definitely donate a piece to the foundation of your choice. So thanks for closing that gap in my general knowledge.
Yeah. But to take you back to that stage. So... Remember, I was there with Dirk, and he explained the whole concept of bike as a service. And I will go to the biz model later on in more detail. And then I asked, as a host, who is interested in this bike? Who would like to rent a bike and have a subscription right now? And out of these 1,000 people, only 5 hands were going up. And I thought like, oh, that's worrisome. And then Dirk said, no, I'm not worried. I said, why? Yeah, because people only consider to swap their bike when it's broken. So here, ask those people who might consider this, they might don't have a bike, or that they the bike is broken and they would like to swap. So I find it fascinating that he had a very clear vision on who is their target segment, but also in the journey, when do they consider such a bike? And then I also assumed that it was based on the price that you need to pay for a new bike, compared to a subscription model. Mm-hmm. But most of their consumers, they don't consider that at all. They only look at, what do I need to pay in order to get access to a bike? And that's it.
But this is a case, I mean, where startups or where a startup conducted that shift in that field.
Yeah. But there's also a corporate company now involved. And that's interesting when you dive deeper into that business model, right? So when you look at their customer segment, they identified students and business workers in the second instance as their key segments. Mm-hmm. And then the value proposition was really about access to a bike that works. And you're not owning it, but it's not ride sharing. So you have access to this bike and you're the only person and you have it 24/7. And as soon as the bike is broken or stolen or whatsoever, you push the button on your app and then it will swap. But when you study that business model more clearly, then if you compare that to a traditional bike sales company, then the bikes stay into the system. So what does that mean is that normally, if you are selling bikes, then you are addicted to this model. So you sell it, you get your money. But if you would like to shift and then keep these bikes in the system, then where do you get your capital from, right? Because what you need to do, you need to create those assets, but then only you get a monthly subscription from your client. So it's a financing thing in that specific business model. So that was one key thing, is if you consider offering these products as a service, like bike as a service, then that has to be taken care of. And the other thing what we learned is when it comes to those key activities in such company, then they design for circularity. And when you look at your bike, the bike as a service, the swap fiets, then it doesn't have a carry-on in the back, right? So you can't sit on the back of your bike. And that's because most bikes are broken or are destroyed because people jump on the back of your bike, and therefore they design for circularity. So and then another one which is important is because of the app you use, then you have direct access to customer information. So it's not a one-time sale. No, it's like continuous information that's collected from customers. So you see that it's a very interesting model. It has very different elements if you compare to a traditional bike sales company.
Mm. I mean, referring to my co-moderator of this show, Jan, who is the founder of Everphone, which is a phone as a service company, so-called. I mean, you have to imagine, how do companies get phones for their employees?
Right.
So the problem is, or the aim is, the employee should be having a working phone, should be satisfied with the choice, maybe get the phone of its own choice. And well, then after using it, it has to be somehow, like, the data has to be wiped and maybe even returned.
Under normal circumstances.
Under normal circumstances. And I mean, what's not normal is that, for example, this number counts for Germany. There are 200 million phones in the drawers of enterprises which are not used anymore.
No way.
So you see how, let's call it, uncircular that is, because
how they sit in these drawers then?
Well, it's just not worth for the company to sell it off, because they have to consider wiping all the data, they have to find a reseller or someone who purchases it in bulk, and they get so low prices that they, like, comparing what you can win, what you can get, and what effort you have to put in. I mean, there have to be employees doing only that and all that. It's just a hustle. So Jan decided exactly in that way to disrupt this acquisition way and make it first as a service. So you pay only what you use. And but what's more important, business model wise, that this business model works, Everphone has to and is reliant to take the phones back after the usage cycle.
Yeah,
because of course, I mean, even we privately, after 2 years, we want to have a new phone. Maybe the battery is getting lower, or the models are getting better. But in so many parts of the world, or for so many other use cases, an iPhone X now is still more than sufficient. But nowadays, no one would consider to get a new iPhone X for their employees. So this business model then is, well, heavy relies on taking those phones back into the system, refurbish them if necessary, and then sell it off and bring it to other consumer groups. Because otherwise also the whole financial situation would not work. So
yeah, I was wondering, when you look at that model and you charge a monthly fee, then Jan needed to think about financing all these phones.
Correct.
But on the other hand also, when you take those phones back, I mean, it's too expensive if you right away would circulate them in to whatever new object. So you said that you refurbish and that goes in through another customer segment cycle.
Absolutely. And I mean, the analogy here to the bike as a service company or car as a service is that whoever does that or whoever brings that service is specialized on only that one asset class in a way.
Yeah.
So the only thing this bike company does is producing, designing
that swap feeds, that only bike. Yeah,
correct. They only do one thing, and they do it. They are perfectly specialized on repairing it, bringing it back to the system, handing it out to the next user.
But when you look at it from a business model perspective, so I just mentioned financing the assets and also they have a relationship with customers. But what you also see in the value proposition, it has to have more benefits, right? So also, I can imagine that if you are a business owner and subscribe to Everphone, then security is taken care of, so that hassle is gone. Then also taking away or taking back these phones, you feel comfortable because it's circular. And when it comes to individual whatever hassle, everybody can choose their own phone and own subscription models, etc. So I think what we learned from studying those business models, that it has to have more than one single benefit to that. So I find it interesting when it comes to this model, that you also see that you move into a different space. So if you move into the space of a mobile subscription, you will compare the amount that you need to pay for the phone transferred into a subscription when it's a regular subscription for mobile operators. But if you now compare this with the problem that is solved for you as a business owner, then it's not comparable with anything else. And then you are prepared to pay more.
Absolutely. I mean, coming back to business owners, if you have a company or you run a specific department for a corporate, what from your book, or which, let's call it, which starting point to not only look, but also starting to shift the own business model, which you recommend first? I mean, what's the first step? What could be a quick win to shift one's business model in a way?
Yeah, so I think one thing is knowing the fact that your business model is changing, that's already the first important thing. And as a result of that change, you see that value is changing, because right now, because of this technology, you guys are able to manage Everphone, right? So what is important then as a business owner to see, hey, I have my current business model, and I need to remain relevant. When I look at these shifts, which of these shifts can apply for my business? And the way we look at this normally, when we reconsider a business model design, then we know that for your business, there are different flavors that you can choose from in order to change your business model. And normally that would be more like a ideation exercise. It would be complicated. But now when you see and you look at those shifts, that is actually proven in the market that those shifts happen. So you as a business owner could think, okay, I'm selling these mobile phones. What would the services shift look for my company? But what would the digital shift look like for my company? Or how would I operate in a platform model? And when you think like a designer and map those out, then you will get insights on how that might be relevant for your business. And then you can make a decision whether you should shift or no. And what we learned with IKEA, for example, is I asked them the question, how come that you are developing this furniture as a service? He said, well, look outside. There are many clients lined up because they request this kind of services. So what I find interesting as a business owner, if you create the lens of the business models and see those different options, you started to recognize much earlier on whether this one could be relevant. So if I would now go to companies and look at their business models, I would always say, okay, what would the services model look like? Because one way or the other, customers are asking for this because they don't want to have hassle. They would like to pay for usage, not ownership. They would like to get access to that kind of stuff more easier and faster. So for sure, customer behavior is changing towards that.
I mean, to be fair, what I think I liked most about reading your book is that there are so many great examples from not only, examples and case studies from not only the companies that we know that are highly innovative anyway, but also from companies that, work in some or operate in some fields of industries that are not that customer facing as we expect. And you describe fairly well exactly in which part of the value creation, so speaking again, in which box of the business model canvas, what is happening to support that specific shift. And I mean, as you just mentioned, knowing that the own business model is changing, that's a good thing. What I always what always helped me in whatever I do is looking left and right, basically. So what are not my direct competitors doing, but what are other industries doing? I mean, maybe
that's what you learn most.
Absolutely, absolutely. What is happening in pharmaceuticals that could be somehow translated to any industrial company or in a way, you know, like sharing sharing development times or sharing laboratories, whatever it could be. And I like about your book that there is this look left and right is basically in that book. So you can, it's like a blueprint to, well, maybe not exactly, but know how to and where to start looking to transform or to shift the business model towards a better in that way, if it's the circular shift, in my words, to a better future.
Huh? Yeah, and you know what is actually interesting? If you take one step back and you look at the content, then because there was no optimum in technology and internet, then the way we ran our business was always suboptimal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's more and more optimized because we can match supply and demand much easier because we know customers better, but also we are able to connect also our production processes much easier. So in the perfect world, there should be no waste, right? And the other thing is when you look at ideas or business models, everything is already invented, but not by you. That's what we always say. And when you look at the case study of Medtronic that's in the book, Medtronic was founded in, and it's a medical device company. It was founded in the US, and the guy who was working on it, he was actually refurbishing or repairing radios, this kind of stuff. Was not very profitable. He spent a lot of time doing this. And then he thought like, hey, maybe I can develop something like a device to keep your heart ticking, like these pacemakers, mm-hmm. so to say. So that's how he started to develop this. And he was already early on wanted to be paid by for usage instead of selling these single items because he wanted to make sure that he could maintain those machineries and learn from that. So you saw technically wise, it was not even possible, but he always wanted to work like that. And now Medtronic has evolved into a big, big global company. And now they do robotics as a service because hospitals are not willing to pay or ready to pay these big capital investors investments for those big machines, right? And that's already happened also with Rank Xerox when they had the first printer in the 50s, 60s.
Mm.
And there's also about the problem to be solved is printing and not buying equipment, right? So I think that's, it's fascinating when you look through that model and look at two examples. And coming back to our publisher, that's what we said. We have seen so many business models. It would be cool just to publish this, but also that other people can make sense out of that.
And I think you achieved what you wanted to.
Thank you,
Patrick. I thank you a lot for those innovative insights into your book, into business model shifts in general, into a very easygoing discussion over a table and Dutch as a service models, but also German as a service models. So I will link for sure to that book in the info box of this podcast. I can highly recommend it. If someone wants to reach out to you, also your contact details are in there. So I can, a small dream come true. I now officially have finished my innovation studies forever.
Thank you. Yeah, you know what I like is that when we were in contact, then you said like, I just come to the office in Amsterdam. So listening to a podcast, you can't see, but we're actually in Amsterdam. So I like that we recorded it here and to have a conversation about this content. And yeah, and I'm super excited about this shift. And I would, you know, I had one conversation with the founder of Fairphone,
mm-hmm.
and he said, yeah, we should stop own stuff. So I think, yeah, that's the right way going forward. So I'm super excited also about your Everphone business model because that's, yeah, I find it tremendously interesting. And not for no reason that we're also becoming a client. So it solves the problem for me as an entrepreneur as well.
Well, I don't know if I have to highlight that as an advertorial or not at this place, but
it was not meant to be.
It was not meant to be. Patrick, thanks for your open insights, sharings of your great book. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.